heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
Local law enforcement should take care of this. But again, when you're seeing burning cars and federal law enforcement being attacked on the streets and with thousands of LAPD, it's clear that they're being overwhelmed. And as the protests rise, we want to make sure those protests actually don't spiral out of control.
That was Oklahoma Senator James Lankford, a member of the Senate Homeland Security Committee, on NBC's Meet the Press yesterday, responding to the renewed riots erupting in Los Angeles. Welcome to this June 9th edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for tuning in. Well, California Governor Gavin Newsom has announced plans to sue the Trump administration over its weekend mobilization of the National Guard, which was deployed to help restore order in riot-hit areas of Los Angeles. Independent journalist Anthony Cabasa will join us with a frontline report from this weekend's unrest. We'll also talk with Josiah O'Neill, former Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputy and former federal law enforcement agent.
The grand jury found that over the past 9 years, Abrego Garcia has played a significant role in an alien smuggling ring. They found this was his full-time job, not a contractor. He was a smuggler of humans and children and women.
Yeah, it was U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi on Friday addressing the return and immediate indictment of Abrego Garcia, who was returned to the U.S. under court order and now faces charges in Tennessee. We'll talk with Congressman Tim Burchett of Tennessee for more on that case. Also, over the weekend, I spoke with U.S. Ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee. I'll share part of that conversation on today's program a little later. Also coming up, FRC's Travis Weber and Washington Stand's editorial director and senior writer Suzanne Bowdy will join me in studio to break down the weekend's events and look ahead to what's coming up this week. And finally, the 21-day Family Bible Challenge through the book of Matthew begins this Wednesday. It's a great way to kick off your summer together as a family. And we've got everything you need. All you have to do is take the challenge. So just text Matthew to 67742 to take the challenge. That's Matthew to 67742. The weekend saw Los Angeles erupt once more again in violent protest as Immigration and Customs Enforcement conducted raids in Southern California, arresting over 40 individuals on Friday suspected of immigration violations. Here to provide us with the latest on the riots in Los Angeles is Anthony Cabasa, who is an independent journalist on the ground currently covering the chaos there in Los Angeles. Anthony, welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
All right, give us your perspective of what you saw there on the ground in Los Angeles.
Yeah, so everything began to unfold last Friday, where I was hearing that there was going to be scheduled protests in front of the federal building, which is an immigration detention center in downtown Los Angeles. This is, by the way, almost a full day before Donald Trump had mentioned that any mention of National Guard being activated. So right now, there's a lot of misinformation happening from at the state level that National Guard kind of incited these protests, but that's just not the reality. I've been there since Friday when the protests first started, and what they were protesting was these ICE raids that were happening to detain all these violent criminals that have been detained since then. So Friday, it just escalated in downtown LA. What I witnessed was DHS agents being assaulted by protesters. They were literally taking hammers to cement so they can break it down into small cement rocks, and they were launching it at DHS. So the National Guard, speak of it, actually came as a result of that footage going nationally viral of DHS agents under attack in Los Angeles.
Did you speak with any of the protesters?
Yeah, I what I tend to do is I try to get a feel of, like, you know, what brings people out here. And so when I got to talk to some of the protesters, you know, some of them are there because they're just anti-government. They don't necessarily recognize law enforcement. They're not too fond of them. Typically, from what I understand, these individuals, these are people that have perhaps previously been detained or incarcerated. So already they have a negative notion of law enforcement. So any opportunity to go and protest law enforcement, they take that opportunity. But there are some that, you know, have had family members that are either being detained or might be targeted in future raids. And so their concern is, you know, that there might be federal overreach, and they're looking on the local government, especially local mayor Karen Bass, to take action to stop this from happening.
Was there any sense, Anthony, that it was organized and who might have been behind it?
Oh, yes. These protests are definitely very organized. Some of the organizations that were putting this together are PSL, the Party of Socialism and Liberation, also DSA Los Angeles, which is a Democratic Socialist of America, and then SEIU. Was also here. That is a large labor union of workers. These are teachers. These are union leaders, labor leaders in Los Angeles. A lot of them, you know, immigrants themselves or family to immigrant families that are here in Los Angeles. And so they've become, you know, activists in style in organizing and mobilizing. There's actually two scheduled protests today by SEIU members, as one of their labor leader unions, David Huerta, has been detained by ICE.
So the final question for you, Anthony, and I appreciate you joining us today. Any sense that maybe this had been pre-planned, just waiting for the moment to call people out to protest, knowing that the Trump administration is moving to enforce immigration law?
Oh, absolutely. There have been statements even by Governor Gavin Newsom and City Mayor Karen Bass saying that, you know, they were aware and are monitoring the ICE raids that had been begun months ago, and that they were reminding people of California that they don't need to worry because, you know, we are a sanctuary state. We have sanctuary cities. They will do everything in their power to make sure that the immigrant community is protected. That includes undocumented legal migrants as well. You got to remember that we have a state budget deficit because in California, money is going to pay for illegal alien health care. And so Democrats for decades have been promising to protect migrant rights here in California. And now their back is kind of against the wall because now the federal government is here. They're raiding and collecting these violent criminals that they promised through, you know, and that's why Donald Trump got elected in 2024, was because he promised that this would happen. And now the federal agents are here. They're collecting. And of course, the state and local government is being held accountable by protesters and labor union organizers.
Anthony Cabasa, thanks so much for taking time to join us today. Appreciate your report. Well, Democrat politicians are criticizing President Trump's response to the L.A. riots. But, I mean, it's become a regular occurrence out there. Of course, you've got a conflict between some local officials and, of course, the state officials. Gavin Newsom now suing the Trump administration for calling out the National Guard to try and restore order. Here to discuss this, Josiah O'Neill, former Los Angeles deputy sheriff and former federal agent. He is the founder and CEO of O'Neill Security Group. Josiah, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me on again.
So your sense of what's happening out there, is this, are we going to see more of this, or is it over after this weekend?
Yeah, just in recent talks I've had with folks that I still am in touch with DHS and other agencies, it's pretty clear that this is not going away. It's quite reminiscent of the, quote, summer of love that we experienced with BLM, which, to your point earlier, it's highly coordinated. There's a lot of money and funds going into groups that are planning this. In fact, recently I was in a briefing discussing domestic terrorism and internal threats, and there aren't just one or two groups, but there's many groups now operating to stoke violence, to foment insurrection and fighting in the streets, et cetera. And really the goal is just chaos. That's their purpose. That's what they exist for. And it's not too hard to find. A simple Google search will show you groups like Antifa and others that Anthony just mentioned a second ago that will pay people to go out and protest. And It's all coordinated. They have instructions on what to do and how to do it, et cetera, all at the expense of the taxpayer. And Los Angeles is burning. It's out of control.
Is there a conflict between, in some cases, between local law enforcement and the calls made by the state leaders like the governor?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you'd like a voice to represent them, I'll tell you now that at the political level, that's where the conflict exists. LA is a great example. Karen Bass, who shirks her responsibilities during you know, these huge wildfires, and now is actually encouraging violence by calling law enforcement domestic terrorists. Of course, your on-the-ground LAPD guy does not agree with that. But it's amazing how fast the tables turn. In fact, on day one of the riots, LA police chief says, we don't need any help. We have it under control, if they would have just asked. And then within 24 hours, this is as of last night, he goes on Fox News and says, my officers are completely overwhelmed, and I quote, he's disgusted by the level of violence that he's seen. So this is escalating very quickly at the expense of your guys, men and women on the street, who are just trying to protect people out there.
So was it the right call from the Trump administration to call out the National Guard?
Well, I think so, absolutely. I mean, clearly, politics run the city of Los Angeles. We saw this earlier with some of the Palestinian-based riots and UCLA, et cetera, where the city's MO, modus operandi, seems to be just let people burn the city to the ground at the expense of the taxpayer and millions of dollars of damage, not to mention violence and injuries, et cetera. So I think this administration, to put it simply, is not playing around. They will not tolerate this. And it really comes down to definitions. If I were to ask some of these organizations on the left that are encouraging these riots, I would ask one simple question. Do you believe it is right or wrong to enforce the law? That simple question can answer the rest of the story. By simply arresting people, they're claiming that that is violence in of itself. This is a fundamental problem in America, across the entire nation. But if the answer to every time we arrest someone for committing a crime is to burn your city to the ground, then we're obviously going to need some outside help to get this solved.
I mean, I would think that the Trump administration is making this decision informed from what they experienced going back to George Floyd and what happened when, you know, the country was stormed by these, Marxists who just wanted to burn cities down. I mean, this is to contain it, in my view.
Absolutely. And they're not really hiding it. If you listen to Karen Bass and Newsom, their statements are extremely inflammatory. Newsom is saying that this is a dangerous federal overreach, an unlawful act that politicizes the Guard. You have Karen Bass, as I mentioned, calling law enforcement officers domestic terrorists. So, of course, we have history to look at, recent history. In fact, I personally have been a part of some of this extreme left-wing violence. I was in the riots in La Mesa, which devastated the city to the tune of millions of dollars in loss and many people injured and hurt. And of course, BLM riots and that movement during the Summer of Love cost the United States hundreds of millions of dollars. Think of places like Seattle and Portland and others across the nation. This administration made a promise to the American people, and they're really just carrying out the mandate they've been given. This is what America wanted. They were tired of left-wing chaos, emotionalism, the hype that causes violence and destruction, and he is just delivering on what he promised.
Yeah, Americans are tired of the lawlessness. And, we see it on display out in California all the time, and the result is cities that burn. Josiah, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks again, Tony.
It is. You give them an inch, you take a mile. It's lawlessness on full display. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk with Congressman Tim Burchett of Tennessee, so don't go away. Hello, I'm Tony Perkins, and we're here in Jerusalem, the city of King David. And I'm excited to announce the launch of our Family Bible Challenge to read through the Gospel of Matthew. Now, this 21-day challenge begins on June the 11th, and it's a part of our Stand on the Word Bible reading plan. It's in bite-sized readings. It takes about 10 to 15 minutes a day, and we provide a toolbox full of resources to help you along the journey, including a study guide titled Matthew, the King and His Kingdom. We also provide downloadable resources such as age-appropriate questions to engage children, and we have a variety of family-friendly projects, as well as this, listen, a coloring book, coloring pages, about the life of Jesus for the younger kids and your grandkids. Think about it. What could be a better summer activity than to go on a journey through the life of Jesus as a family? Just think what God could do in the lives of your loved ones as they read Matthew. Unforgettable stories about the greater Son of David, Jesus the Messiah. I hope you'll join us for our Family Bible Challenge beginning June the 11th. Text the word Matthew to 67742. I hope you'll join us.
In a time when Washington seems clouded by compromise, a bold group of lawmakers are standing firm in defense of the values which our nation was built upon. At FRC Action's 100% Awards, 171 members of Congress were honored for voting 100% in line with policies that promote faith, family, and freedom.
Faith and family made our country, it's the foundation that made our country not only great, but good.
The values that make America, faith, family, hard work, personal responsibility. I mean, that to me is the heart of FRC, and grateful for everything that they do.
It's very important for us to have organizations such as FRC. First of all, I think it keeps us grounded. In addition to which, the issues that you champion are issues that we should all be championing.
FRC is very, very good at honing in on those things that really affect Christians' lives. Also, working with members of Congress, too, to make sure that those values are instilled in the legislation that we create.
Having the Family Research Council to guide us is critically important to being able to do the right thing consistently.
These lawmakers have drawn the line, not just in policy, but in principle. This is more than politics. This is conviction in action. Visit FRCAction.org for more information on how you, too, can make a difference.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. And again, let me remind you of the 21-day Family Bible Challenge through the book of Matthew. It begins this Wednesday. And we have it all set out for you to for the 21 days. We've got the reading plan. We've got discussion questions. We've got activities for the kids. It's all there. All you have to do is take the challenge. So text Matthew to 67742, and I'll send you a link. Well, continuing with more immigration news, deported migrant Kilmar Abrego Garcia was returned to the U.S. on Friday by federal court order. He was immediately in court in Tennessee, where he was indicted for smuggling illegals into the country, including children. Here to discuss this and more, Tennessee Congressman Tim Burchett. Tim, welcome back to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, brother. I really appreciate it.
Well, before we get into Tennessee news and the indictment there, let's talk about the Los Angeles riots. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it's just disgusting. I saw where ABC News was talking about how that they, there's people there enjoying a car burning and that the police were just escalating the problem. I tweeted out, I know in the Burchetts when I have fun, we go to a good car burning. It's just unbelievable. It just shows you that, just how far this country is slipping off into the abyss, and how the traditional media, as it will, is losing its grip on reality, and lawlessness cannot be tolerated in this country. And we have got to put this down as fast as possible. And now they're calling for these things all over the country. I think it'll be a different time, I think.
This is of concern to all of us, because when you see these left-wing cities and states, I mean, California's like Los Angeles burns every other year. I mean, they've always got something they're rioting about out there.
Yep.
And who pays the tab? you know, all of that, it is shifted. The cost is shifted, and the rest of Americans pay for these for the Marxist ideology that drives many of these cities that fuels lawlessness.
Sure, they don't care anything about our way of life, Tony. They just, they've, I know I've read reports that the mayor of Los Angeles, she's actually gone to training in Cuba, of all places. And this is, you know, this is a communist type tactic. And they attack our values, they attack everything we stand for, and then they riot and loot and do those kind of things. And I would say, if you're a member of law enforcement community in California, you would be feeling very low right now. I would say the morale is not very good. And I hope they do send in the National Guard, and if necessary, the Marines. I'm sick of this kind of thing, as you are. I think when you stand by and let it go, that just enhances that much more and encourages it.
Yeah, I think the mayor ought to go back to Cuba, learn how to roll cigars, and get a more productive profession for herself. Let's talk Tennessee. Garcia forced to return. The courts made sure that he was returned. He originally from Maryland, living in Maryland, came back, faced charges in Tennessee. This guy is not a good guy.
No, human trafficking, all the other horrific things. The left and the Democrat Party wanted justice for him. Well, he's getting ready to get some justice. And I'm glad to see we're just not deporting people. I think it's important that in the past, you know, we deport people and they just come right back. I'd say you give them some hard time, and that sends a clear message that we're not going to tolerate this kind of thing. President Trump and his Justice Department are not going to tolerate this. The human trafficking aspect really disturbs me. I can remember I passed a law dealing with human trafficking when I was in the state legislature, state Senate, years ago, and just how foreign it was, because I followed a van, on a rickety old van, and it turned loose a bunch of people in an area of Nashville. And today, it's with that open border under the Biden administration, you know, there's the millions and millions of people that came across. And I think, too, that there's small children involved in this trafficking with the prostitution and everything else. And it's just it's unbelievable, really, Tony, that we've allowed this to get to this point. But something else I think people need to realize is that this guy was caught by the Tennessee State Troopers. And the Biden Justice Department, the FBI, told them to turn him loose. You got to imagine the morale. These are I know a lot of state troopers, and they are very patriotic men and women. Many of them served in our military, and they are straight arrows, and they are first rate. And I can't imagine what that did to their morale and their psyche when they have this guy. He's got a van full of illegals. And then they're told by the FBI to turn him loose. The whole thing just stinks from top to bottom. It almost reeks of a federal collusion with some of these people and just allowing them to get by with this, or that wasn't their priority when, in fact, it should have been.
Well, I think it's the left has this view that it's compassionate not to enforce the law, when, in fact, it is the most compassionate thing to enforce the law, because it protects the innocent, as you just pointed out about the trafficking, which Garcia was involved in. If we enforce the law, we protect innocent people.
Yeah, and they said that he's possibly hauled in hundreds of people. And that, to me, is just, that's beyond forgiveness right there. He needs to do some really serious hard time. And the message needs to go out that we're just not going to tolerate this stuff anymore. To think that our federal government basically just endorsed that kind of behavior by turning him loose, to me, is something that's that is unforgivable.
Congressman, we've got about a minute left. What can we expect this week from Capitol Hill?
Well, some more Doge-type things, I hope. I'm going to be dropping, I've got a few more that I've prepared. My staff has done very well at keeping up with that, and we're going to be dropping them. I'm not going to wait around for word on high to turn loose these things. This country wants to see some cost savings, and I'm ready to do it.
All right, and we're ready to cheer you on. So, Congressman, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Tim Burchett of Tennessee, also a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee. All right, when we come back, speaking of foreign affairs, we're going to be talking with Mike Huckabee, actually. I talked with him over the weekend, but I want to share the conversation I had with him regarding Hamas and how the media is just parroting the propaganda that comes out of Hamas there in Gaza, when Israel and the United States doing quite a bit to address the humanitarian issue, Hamas spewing all types of lies, and the media runs with it. That's coming up next, so don't go away.
The Center for Biblical Worldview's all-day workshops delves into the formation of a worldview, what it is, how it's formed, when it's formed, what that means to them personally and their churches and communities.
My hope for people when they come to these worldview workshops is that they will come away better equipped to engage the people and the ideas that they're living with and around. And our goal is to give people more confidence in the gospel, in the fact that what God said to us actually is true, actually is the path to happiness and human flourishing for all of us, but also more confidence in their ability to have these conversations and help lead other people to the truth.
For Bible-believing Christians to know what God's Word says on these issues and to learn how they can apply it to their lives. And we believe that the more Christians that we equip, that's how we'll change the nation.
Hey fam, listen, Pastor Sammy here at Lighthouse Church, and I cannot tell you how equipping, how empowering, how incredibly educating this conference has been. And so I just want to encourage anybody that either has not been part of or is thinking about hosting this event, certainly to pastors, leaders, even CEOs for that matter, this conference is lights out. Stand behind it myself. I can't commend it enough. We're going to be talking about this for some time to come.
The culture is kind of squeezing in on us as God's people, forcing those of us with biblical views to change those views or to suppress those views. It's forcing us to engage with issues that we've never had to engage with. And so what this teaches us is what those issues are, what the Bible says about those issues, and then how we can critically engage our culture on these things in a way that is committed to biblical principle.
Visit frc.org/worldview for more information.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks so much for joining us on this Monday. Well, Hamas continues to do what it can to hinder the delivery of aid to the people of Gaza. They're using humanitarian aid as leverage, and in fact, even selling it to fuel their war effort against Israel. Well, over the weekend, I spoke with Ambassador Mike Huckabee, the U.S. ambassador to Israel, regarding what is actually happening there on the ground with the U.S. and Israeli-based humanitarian effort. Here is part of my conversation with Ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee.
They took what Hamas, the same group that massacred 1,200 people on October 7th, took 250 hostages, continued to hold 58 hostages, and they took that press release from these savages, and they just ran with it. And we were outraged because all of us who have been working with GHF to get the food into the people who need it, but in a manner, as the president ordered, not to let Hamas steal it and turn around and try to sell it back to people who were hungry. This was incredibly detrimental. It was just flat wrong. So I came out with a very strong statement last week and just said, you know, this was not only irresponsible, not only was it reprehensible that they did it, but I said this kind of totally biased and fake news is contributing to the anti-Semitic attitude, the kind of atmosphere that leads people to throw Molotov cocktails at an 88-year-old Holocaust survivor in Boulder, Colorado, and that gets two young people assassinated on the street in cold blood, shot in the back by a terrorist yelling Free Palestine. That's the tragedy of this. This is not innocent journalism. Well, after that, the Washington Post took their story down. The New York Times and some others started altering their stories and putting other things in to try to make it look like they were being balanced, but they weren't being balanced. And now the same media outlets have sought to attack us. By the way, the one thing I thought was interesting was that Hamas was most critical of some of the statements that I have made in defense of GHF. And I thought, what a badge of honor that Hamas doesn't like what I'm saying.
Mr. Ambassador, it's not just the legacy media that is taking and using and regurgitating Hamas's own press releases, but the United Nations is using it, in part using it, the UN Security Council using it this week to advance a resolution. Even some historic friends of the U.S. buying into this narrative.
That's been incredibly frustrating. The UN has been whining for weeks that there need to be a humanitarian effort. As soon as there was one, they started complaining that they didn't like the way it was being conducted. This is like saying, I'm so very hungry. I am so very, very hungry. And then when the food shows up, saying, I don't like the color of plate that the food is being served on. The UN has not lifted a finger. They have not done anything to actually feed people. They criticized, they complained, they have conspired with Hamas. And I know that sounds harsh, but Tony, when you stand with Hamas and you stand against an effort that is trying to feed the civilians, there's nothing else that you can come to the conclusion of other than the UN and some of its various subsidiary agencies now are exposed. They're not interested in helping feed people. They're interested in padding their own pockets and condemning Israel. And that's just the hard and fast. Thank goodness the U.S. vetoed that Security Council resolution at the UN. But it's just one more way to look at this and wonder, should we even continue supporting the UN, the billions of dollars that we've spent through the years with this organization? What are we getting from it? What is the world getting from it, other than some of these reckless lies that they continue to tell?
Heartburn. That's about it. Heartburn. Mr. Ambassador, we just have about 2 minutes left. Not only is Israel facing external issues, there's some challenges that the prime minister is facing internally, as there's a bit of division in his governing coalition with the ultra-Orthodox over an issue that's long been there. But after, 20 months of war, the citizens of Israel apparently want everyone to serve in the military. Ultra-Orthodox want the exclusion for those in their community to study scripture. How fragile is this coalition?
It's pretty fragile right now. And unfortunately, the timing couldn't be worse for the Netanyahu government. It's not the job of the U.S. Embassy to get involved in the internal politics of Israel. I did have a meeting with the head of one of the groups, one of the ultra-Orthodox groups, and I did share with him that, it's a delicate situation that the U.S. would not understand. When I say the U.S., not necessarily the U.S. government, but the U.S. Public would have a hard time understanding why there would be an attempt to dissolve a government in the middle of a war with Houthi missiles coming at us almost on a daily basis. Twice this week, I've been pushed to the shelter by Houthi missiles. So it's something they're going to have to work through. I don't know if they are sincere in wanting to create a collapse of the government, which would result in a call for new elections, realignment of the parties. It's possible that Prime Minister Netanyahu could build a different coalition, still hold power. But there's also a possibility that the whole government collapse and there would be a new prime minister, a new Security Council for Israel. It would create some true upheaval at a very inopportune time.
Very bad timing. Well, that was part of my conversation with the U.S. Ambassador to Israel, our good friend Mike Huckabee. That was a part of my weekend program this week on Capitol Hill. You can actually watch the entire interview if you want to go to thisweekoncapitolhill.com. All right, after the break, we'll have our panel discussion to go over some of the topics that came up over the weekend and kind of look at what's ahead this week. But before we do, let me remind you of the 21-day Family Bible Challenge through the book of Matthew. It starts on Wednesday, so sign up now. Text Matthew to 67742 to take the challenge. All right, don't go away. We're back after this.
Family Research Council is committed to advancing faith, family, and freedom from the East Coast to the West. So FRC is going to Southern California for this year's Pray, Vote, Stand Summit, October 17th and 18th at Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. Join us for this powerful gathering of Christians desiring cultural renewal and spiritual revival. The Pray, Vote, Stand Summit brings together Christian leaders, issue experts, and government officials for a time of prayer, inspiration, and action. Together, we will seek God's guidance for our nation and engage in meaningful discussions on the intersection of faith, government, and culture. If the spiritual foundations and the cultural walls of our nation are to be rebuilt, we all have a role to play. May we each find our place on the wall as we build for biblical truth. Register now at PrayVoteStand.org. That's PrayVoteStand.org.
Jennifer, it's so exciting to be here with you today talking about our new book, Embracing God's Design. Who is actually going to benefit from reading this book in your view?
There are so many different audiences that can benefit. The first one, our counselors themselves, right? Because we have some material in there where we really address the gender dysphoria diagnosis and what is wrong with it. We have information for people who are wanting to go back to embracing God's design for their life.
This is really magical to have the therapist and the individual who suffered come together and write about why this is happening and why we're seeing this.
And we brought all of that experience to the table. We want to see people walking in the fullness of who God has called them to be and not a false identity.
Order today at embracethedesign.com.
How should Christians think about the thorny issues shaping our culture? How should Christians address deceitful ideas like transgenderism, critical theory, or assisted suicide? How can Christians navigate raising children in a broken culture, the war on gender roles, or rebuilding our once great nation? Outstanding is a podcast from the Washington Stand dedicated to these critical conversations. Outstanding seeks to tear down what our corrupt culture lifts up, with an aim to take every thought and every idea captive to the obedience of Christ. Whether policies or partisan politics, whether conflict in America or conflict abroad, join us and our guests as we examine the headlines through the lens of Scripture and explore how Christians can faithfully exalt Christ in all of life. Follow Outstanding on your favorite podcast app and look for new episodes each week.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you have the Stand Firm app. You can find it in the App Store, Stand Firm. That way you can have Washington Watch with you no matter where you go. You also can have access to the Washington Stand, our news and commentary from a biblical perspective. You can also have access to my daily devotional, Stand on the Word. And speaking of that, our word for today comes from Malachi chapter 2. For the lips of a priest should guard knowledge, and people should seek instruction from his mouth. For he is the messenger of the Lord of hosts. But you have turned aside from the way. You have caused many to stumble by your instruction. You have corrupted the covenant of Levi, says the Lord of hosts. And so I make you despised and abased before all the people, inasmuch as you do not keep my ways, but show partiality in your instruction. This is a sobering indictment. The priests, appointed as guardians of God's truth, had failed in their sacred duty. Instead of guiding the people in righteousness, they led them into error. Their partial and self-serving instruction corrupted the covenant and caused others to stumble. It goes on to say, "You have wearied the Lord with your words," in verse 17. The priest claimed innocence, but their distortion of good and evil revealed their hearts were far from God. They called evil good and questioned God's justice. Moral decay begins with spiritual compromise. When truth is neglected in the pulpit, confusion spreads in the culture. For more on the journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. Well, over the weekend, the World Pride Parade marched through the District of Columbia, proudly commemorating in part the 50th anniversary of D.C.'s Pride celebrations. Though in reality, it was really more of the Global Gomorrah March. So how is corporate America handling Pride Month after the national pushback? Well, you might be surprised. Joining me now with a look at this and more stories from the weekend is the Washington Stands editorial director, Suzanne Bowdy, as well as FRC's vice president for policy and government affairs, Travis Weber. Travis, Suzanne, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks, Tony.
All right. Both of you have been around the city. I don't know if you were out on the streets over the weekend or not, but what did you make of D.C.'s Pride celebration?
Well, I think it's an interesting time for this march to be in D.C., given that I assume they thought there'd be someone else in the White House when they planned this, not someone that's really taking on this ideology of Pride. Unfortunately, I think there was probably a little more somber tone this year than past years.
Well, this was like a special event because this was a global march, but yet I think they were only able to gather about 1,000 people.
And it was punctuated by violence, unfortunately. We saw that there was a double stabbing along the parade route. There were two shootings as well. So what happened this weekend was not—
It was just a regular day in D.C.
Just a regular day in D.C., yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think it turned out the way they were hoping. There was a real attitude, from what I read, of defiance. I think people were very concerned that they're being forgotten or marginalized a bit under this new regime and with all these legislation, executive orders, et cetera.
I mean, there is a cultural shift that's taking place, but it's more than just a policy issue.
Tony, absolutely. You know, and it's significant. You look at what Trump has done. This is a good start to addressing what we're seeing. But, you know, Suzanne, I'm thinking to that the news item about the Trevor Project that you'd raised, showing that we need to not necessarily take stock only in what we're seeing come out policy-wise. We have to understand there are deeper things here, longer-term trends, cultural and spiritual trends related to this issue.
Right. He mentioned the Trevor Project.
Right.
Explain that to our viewers and listeners.
Well, I think people should be really proud of what they've accomplished in this anti-woke movement. Well, proud, maybe a different word to describe that. But what we have seen is that there are still some very stubborn CEOs out there, some very hardcore leftists who are not abandoning this woke ideology.
Are they open and proud about it, or some of it doing—
They're very open and proud about it. I would say, though, that the problem is a lot of Americans don't understand what they're financing. Now, they may see the Trevor Project that you mentioned as a youth suicide prevention organization, which is how they bill themselves. That's very convenient, but that's not actually what they do. I think a lot of us would say, yes, we want to prevent youth suicide, but when you dig deeper and you look under the hood at what they're actually doing and bringing to the schools, it's very dangerous, a very sinister agenda, and a lot of corporations right now feel very good about funding them. And we've seen actually growth.
Okay, so explain a little bit what the Trevor Project does so people will know when they see it that this is really a smokescreen for the LGBTQ agenda.
Absolutely. Right now they have a model school policy booklet that they're distributing to schools, thousands and thousands of schools, allies, et cetera. In that, they're encouraging schools and administrators, counselors, teachers to hide information about their child's gender identity from parents.
So this actually runs counter to the law in many places.
Oh, absolutely. And they're doing it under this cloak of, well, is your school LGBT affirming? Are you preventing youth suicide? Are you helping the mental health of students? But when you look deeper into what they're advocating, it's actually pulling parents out of the process and really encouraging and affirming this trans ideology that's dangerous, as we've seen, and harmful.
So let's talk about some of the corporate sponsors.
Yes, and I think we have a graphic we can show you. So keep your eyes out for some of these companies. They're well-known brands. Macy's, we're talking about $1 million donation from Macy's and Abercrombie & Fitch. These are all companies that are giving six-figure donations. FedEx, these are big names.
Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola. You'll see Sephora on there. Kohl's, I know, who's been in the crosshairs
a lot. The NFL?
The NFL.
What's the NFL do? I mean,
I have no idea, but you'll also notice that the National Education Association, which is a teachers union, is funding this project to the tune of $100,000. So money that you think is going to your union dues is actually going to transing kids and hiding it from parents.
And that bug down there at the bottom of the corner, that Washington Watch, that's just showing what program
you're
watching.
We're not involved.
That's not a part of the graphic for those you're watching. Just want to make sure
involved.
You're clear on that.
And it's interesting looking at these names. You know, Suzanne, we've looked at this and how some corporations are pulling back in response to the Trump administration's, right? But it's reported openly. They're pulling back because they're concerned about their own bottom line.
Right, but they're hiding. And I forgot to mention Harry's is on there. That's the, is that the, which Harry's? Is that the one that does the razors and stuff?
Yes, that's the one. Harry's razor and shave cream products. Do you use it?
I used to.
Oh, good. Oh, good. To. Yeah.
But it's hard to find. I mean, Gillette is bad. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
But I would say everybody needs to draw their own line. Mine, for me, if you're going to trans children and be proud about it, I'm not going to buy your products. Yeah. And some of these corporations that we're talking about, people aren't even aware that what they're buying
is
being
rounded
up. Where
can people find, is there a place where people can go
to
see this?
Yeah, on the Washington Stand, you can look for my article, which is up right now, listing some of those corporations. But people really need to be aware that when they're shopping in the month of June, some of that money is going to some of these places if they're not careful.
Well, I think that's extremely important because it is that buyer pushback that mm-hmm. has led to, in part, I mean, it's been several layers of this. We've had people running for school boards pushing back right. on this. We've had parents show up at school boards. But you have Target, you've got JCPenney a few years ago. These corporations took a tremendous hit because of consumer pushback.
Right. And I think that we need to stay engaged. The one thing I would say to people is, yes, we've won a lot of victories, but people need to be very vigilant about what's happening with their dollars.
And Tony, you talk about buyer pushback. You know, I'm thinking of the NEA. We have had parent pushback. We need more parent pushback. Right. And I drove past their headquarters in D.C. You know, it's flying. Massive pride flag right up there with the American flag. Outside the headquarters is supposed to be representing teachers from around the country. Who agrees with that? Who doesn't agree? People need to know that's the flagship entity that's supposed to be representing the well-being of our children's education.
Well, and I think it's important for our viewers and listeners to understand that while we celebrate some of the executive orders and the policies coming out at present, it's just a temporary suppression unless we change the
Absolutely.
Underlying culture, which only happens by spiritual revival and awakening. And we've got to be praying, but acting at this moment where we have the cover of the government protecting religious expression, we need to be getting into these school boards. We need to be getting into these schools. We need to be pushing back on this and changing policy, but changing hearts and minds.
And Tony, we have to, you know, really think about the fact that everyone who was in D.C. for these celebrations this week, they're here for some reason. Now, it might be they're raised in an environment where that's celebrated and they're just here for that. Some might be trying to find a real need that they have in their own heart for meaning in the universe. And to them, they believe genuinely they're going to get it in that community.
Right.
But we need to be there with God's truth when people need answers
and they think they're going to find their solution in government. We see we find our solution in God. And by the way, we've got a great resource on this topic.
Yeah, so Embracing God's Design.
Embracing God's Design. I knew it was I'm trying to remember. I've got many things in my head.
Tony,
Embracing God's Design.
And that's the answer for folks, right? It's God has set forth in creation in the scriptures, but it's evident from the created order itself.
I should remember that because I'm making a speech tonight, God's Design. All right, let's move on to international issues. Over the weekend, a group of journalists joined by IDF soldiers went through a tour of Hamas tunnels, which was under a major hospital in Gaza. And this is, relevant to us. Just last week, we hosted a group here in our headquarters here in Washington, a former hostage that was released back in February, and the parents of two currently held hostages. And he was describing these tunnels to us.
Yeah, Tony, I mean, it's very, you know, it's significant from the perspective of this testimony, as we heard here at FRC, and I know the Washington Stand wrote about this, the firsthand testimony of being held in the tunnels and in the hands of Hamas. And I think the visual imagery, why is this important to folks? The imagery of what we're seeing there, what folks are seeing is beneath what a facility that is supposed to be serving the medical care of Gazans. This was the Hamas commander in the Gaza Strip whose body was found sheltering beneath the European hospital in the Gaza Strip. So it's clear evidence. People cannot move past this without recognizing a military unit leader was sheltering beneath a entity which is protected under law of armed conflict unless it falls under the exceptions. One of those is when there's a legitimate military target sheltering behind that hospital, and it can be targeted. So Israel, and they've been sharing this in the New York Times with other news outlets, they're not trying to target this, but they knew these military objectives were there, and they're doing everything they can to get at those objectives. And unfortunately, there's damage to the area. People need to understand the context, though.
So, Suzanne, if they're going to build tunnels under hospitals, under schools, then is it a stretch to think that they would use humanitarian aid as leverage in this battle against Israel?
No, this reveals one more time what Hamas is doing, how they're fighting the war. It's immoral. I know Greta Thunberg has just tried to land, and one of the things that Israel did that was great
is forcing her to watch.
But they are forcing her to watch the Hamas atrocities, and I think that that will be very important for everyone to see what they're capable of.
Well, you're speaking of Hamas. You know, I played a clip of my interview with Mike Huckabee where the legacy media just took Hamas and what they said for, you know, the gospel and keep parroting. The media, Greta is a creation of the media. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's unbelievable that this girl would be considered an authority on anything.
A reliable source on anything, let alone Hamas, right?
Yeah.
And undermined Israel.
But yeah, she's seeking attention.
For the benefit of our listeners, viewers, she got her start speaking out against global warming and was all of a sudden catapulted into being an expert at the age of, I don't know, what was she, 13 years
Very
old or
young,
something?
Yeah.
But Tony, you know, this is...
And I'm not even sure she could reach the thermometer or the thermostat.
So there are a lot of articles being written about, you know, this and her visit. But this draws people's attention to what's happening. And I was reading this New York Times article. Even they had to admit, they were admitting that it was legitimate for Israel to go after the objective of Sinwar and others underneath that hospital. And, you know, you could tell in their analysis, they were not, you know, it was like sort of they're trying to hedge, but they could not deny the fact that was a legitimate
target. But even how they did it, they worked outside the perimeters of the hospital, and you saw Hamas was literally under the emergency room of the hospital.
Not by accident.
Right.
No.
Totally by design. All right, we just have about 2.5 minutes left. Staying on the international front, Travis, this past weekend, Colombia was rocked by a stunning act of political violence in an assassination attempt against a conservative politician and a grandson of a former president who I believe is a candidate himself. We're seeing more and more of this political violence.
Yeah, this is concerning. So this is important because the current president, Petro, in Colombia, has been ramping up the rhetoric. He's a former M19 guerrilla leader. These are violent groups. He's been elected, but the country is not doing well. He's been anti-Israel and going after. He's anti-Semitic in his policies and remarks, and he's called his opponents Nazis. Now you have the attempted assassination of the primary opposition leader, who's now in critical condition after surgery. And thankfully, the U.S. State Department put out a notice calling for prayer. Secretary Rubio was tweeting about this. But this is indicative of some trends we see ricocheting around the world, because just like President Trump, back last year, candidate Uribe asked for increased security, didn't get it. And so we see some of the effect of the rhetoric, the need for protection, but also the underlying instability that countries need to address if they're going to survive.
You know, years ago, I actually was a part of training some of the security for Colombian officials back when they were on the good side. But the reality is, when you have this Marxist ideology, violence begins to come in. And we see it, Suzanne, even in our own country, as we were just talking about earlier,
which
in California.
Which is very unfortunate. I mean, it's not limited to Colombia. It's on the streets of L.A. You see Democratic officials actually encouraging more violence, saying we need to ramp up and escalate, when in fact we need law and order, which is why President Trump was elected.
I'm very concerned about this, that we become desensitized to political violence. We should not accept lawlessness on the streets of our country and our communities. Nor should we accept lawlessness on behalf of those who enforce the law. Mm-hmm. We have boundaries for everyone, and we have to operate within them if we want to maintain this republic.
Mm-hmm.
Suzanne, Travis, thanks for joining me.
Thanks.
All right. And folks, thank you for joining us as well. Be sure and check out the Washington Stand. You can get it on the Stand Firm app, or you can go to thewashingtonstand.com. So get the app, and you'll have it right there in your pocket. Out of time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, and you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.